This is a tall pulpit. Need an adjustment for shorter guys. We've had a great time. I agree, Sandy. It's been an awesome conference and really enjoy the format. Am I done already? Forget the flag. Conference has been okay. I've been to better. It has been a great conference. I love the format of having the regional guys here from this area speak. You know, I see your faces, get to know you a little bit, but it's great to hear what's inside of you as well. And I think we've all been blessed by both the guys that have come out from California or Germany, wherever you happen to be at the time you left, and the guys here, and some great stuff to take away. And David gave a powerful message last night, powerful prayer. Did you guys hear him pray for a fresh shot of discouragement? Billy quit last night. So all of you that were jealous, you no longer have to be jealous. Billy is, he's in despair with you as well. So it's been an effective conference. I would like to share with you, actually I would rather not have to share with you about criticism as it goes, because to stand up here and have to share about it means that there's been quite a bit that has come my way. But I need to put this disclaimer out there first, because in talking about some of the things that I'm going to share, you could easily walk away with thinking, man, Calvary Chapel Lynchburg, I wouldn't want a pastor there. But I have to defend the church before I speak about those that have criticized. I pastor an awesome church. The people there are loving. They have shown kindness and generosity to my family. And really, it's been a very peaceful experience. Never had a split. Certainly have had people that have been unhappy, as you will hear. But these are some experiences that have come. And actually, the worst has not even come from within the church. It's come from outside of the church. Over the last 18 months, maybe 2 years, incredible criticism has come. Actually, some of you actually got it, didn't you? There was one man that was unhappy with the decision that I had made about his marriage and how to handle the conflict that was going on. And so, because I would not follow his direction, which I thought was totally wrong, he saw fit to send out letters, and you got a special FedEx package, didn't you? Yeah. He's never shown it to me. Actually, I don't want to see it. That is one thing I learned about criticism. If you don't have to look at it, don't. But, you know, emails went out throughout this region to a lot of people, to a lot of friends, to a lot of people I didn't even know. And phone calls started coming in, of which every single one of them, and I just about say thank you for those of you that did that, called and just said an encouraging word. Hey, I don't know who this guy is, but it's obvious that he's got a problem. And that's kind of the encouragement that I received from you in the midst of criticism. I can tell you it meant a lot, because when I began to realize that he was sending out emails to Calvary Chapel pastors throughout the United States, it definitely got me wondering. And then I saw that one went to Pastor Chuck, and I really started to ponder that one. And, you know, it was basically a threat to him, you know, if he didn't do something with me and, you know, and do what he felt was the right thing. So there was a lot of that coming on. Letters and emails went out to people in the church. Letters continue to come to the elders. I can't even begin to tell you how many dozens of emails I received and letters I received. And it just was a constant barrage of criticism that was coming. I mean, I don't want to get into all the details, because he'll probably listen to this online and then it'll all start up again. But, I've thought a lot about that, actually. But, you know, he felt like there was marriage problems, and his wife started coming to our church, and he wanted me to kick her and the grandchildren out. Well, the reason she stopped going with him was many reasons, but among some of them was that he no longer wanted the grandchildren to go to church. Well, I might be known as a lot of things in town, but I'm not going to be known as the pastor that kicked grandma and her kids out of church. You know what I'm saying? You can be known for a lot of things, but that wasn't one of the things I wanted to be known for in Lynchburg. And it was a much more complicated than that, and there's all kinds of issues that took place. But man, in the midst of all of that, feelings and emotions, I became more in touch with my feelings and emotions than I had been in quite some time. I was angry. There were times when I was fearful, and the fear really was not logical, but it was still there. When I saw that this letter went to Chuck, I thought, that's it. He's done with me. I'm like, he's not done with me. Why would he be done with me? I didn't have done anything wrong. And you know those battles that you begin to play through your mind. And I wonder what people are going to think, and what are they going to say about me? And the fear was there. I was anxious. I was angry. Did I mention that I was angry? There was so much anger that I had towards this guy that I had to continually bring to the Lord. And I think, only the Lord knows, but I think for the most part, I continued to bring that anger to the Lord before I sinned greatly. Maybe a little sin. But, you know, it was very hard to deal with that. I wanted to do a lot of responding to that. But as we'll get into this study, the Lord told me, he put a pause button on me, which basically said, stand still. During the same period of time, there was somebody from within our church. I call her the tomato prophetess. She came to church and she had these tomato plants that she wanted me to hand out with a message of doom and gloom for America, and that we all were going to have to go back to the land, and we were going to have to begin to live off of the land. And so I needed to do this. I said, listen, you can give tomato plants away, but we're not going to do this. May we fall into an even worse economic recession? It's certainly possible. Could America fall into trouble and we would have to, you know, change the way of life? Yes, it's possible, but I don't discern that's what the Lord is saying, nor do the elders of this church, so we cannot put that out. We'll have to wait and see. Well, that made her, the tomato prophetess, very upset. And so then she began to bring criticism against me. And actually, one of the things that she said was, she says, because it kind of morphed, it was not a logical, and it rarely is, a logical thinking that was taking place, but because I wouldn't do this, this morphed into some other thoughts and ideas that brought criticism. I was neglecting the church because I was spending too much time on missions, and that we needed to spend less time on missions, and I needed to be around for the bride of the church. And so as we talked, I said, listen, I can show you my schedule. I can show you what percentage of time I spend at Calvary Chapel Lynchburg. I can show you what amount of time I spend counseling and studying. I can show you where, percentage-wise, how much money goes to taking care of home versus on the outside. And I assure you, we are far from neglecting home base. But this again made her upset. So then she prophesied and said that because I had neglected the church, Jesus' bride, that my bride was going to suffer harm and that there was going to be terrible things come to her. And so I said, well, you know, I don't believe that. Now, I took some time with her because this was an unstable person in the fellowship that I felt like I needed to sit down with, and I needed to see her through this unstable time. But nonetheless, it wears on you in the midst of all that other stuff that's going on. And so eventually she came into church one day, and I was there to talk again. And so I had the secretary, Joe's wife, assistant pastor, his wife came into the office, and we sat down, and she had shaved her head as a sign to me that there was going to be all this trouble that would come upon us, and that the mission trip that was going to happen in the summer was going to result in big-time trouble. I said, there's no mission trip this summer. So I said, I think you shaved your head in vain. I didn't say that out loud, but I'm thinking that, you know, we have no mission trip going on, so I think your hair is going to grow out before this becomes a sign. So these things were going on. And that's the tomato prophetess. And then there's this other guy that's constantly, you know, sending this barrage of stuff. And not too long before that, some people that I deeply cared for and still do, departed and left the church after being there for almost, well, since the beginning, really. And that was painful. And some of the criticisms that were leveled, and they knew me. That's the problem. The tomato prophetess says something, she doesn't know me. I can deal with that. When some guy on the outside says something, who thinks that I've made a wrong decision, and he does all that, I just get angry. I don't get hurt. I get angry. But when somebody that's close to you, who knows you, says things about you, that is extremely painful. And I think you know what I'm talking about. There's three types of criticisms, and I know I'm not going to get through all my notes. Does anybody ever do that? Does anybody ever do way more than you can ever share? Well, I've done that. So, but I want to talk about three quickly, and I kind of just highlighted them, really, types of criticism. The first is helpful instruction. Now, listen, this is criticism, but it's criticism we need to listen to. It's fair and it's loving. I think one of the mistakes we can make in ministry is to reject that helpful instruction, that fair and loving criticism that comes to us. You're going to be criticized, and you know what? Sometimes we need to have a fair and loving criticism. People can say, did you realize that you had forgotten to take care of these needs? I think we need a better way of monitoring the needs of the fellowship. Sometimes somebody will tell you that the system that's in place at church for conducting a certain ministry is creating more problems than it's helping. Those are some criticisms we need to hear. Praise the Lord for people that love you enough and the ministry enough to look at it and have a thought about it and to put some creative attention to it to say, I think we have another idea. Whether it's a good idea or not, boy, we need to stop and we need to say thank you. And so the idea of fighting unfair criticism, the title itself gives the idea that there is some criticism that is fair. And we need to be willing to receive that. A man who did not receive this kind of helpful instruction was Rehoboam. I'm not going to turn to it, but 2 Chronicles chapter 10, 1 through 16. The north comes and says, listen, we got a bit of a criticism here. Your father put a heavy load on us. We don't want to do that anymore. What can we do? He got in counsel from the elders, and they said, yes, this is too much. Let's lighten the load and they'll be yours. They'll serve you. But the younger man said, no, lay it on. And so he rejected the helpful instruction and correction, the criticism that said, this is too heavy. This is too much work. And they rejected it. And you know what happened? It caused all kinds of problems. And so Proverbs 19:20 says, listen to counsel and receive instruction that you may be wise in your latter days. When people come, and they come with a loving heart, and they come to give you something that maybe you're not seeing, don't get defensive. Listen to it. Listen with a smile. Don't interrupt them. And hear them out, because you may learn a lot. You will learn a lot. You will learn a lot if we take the time to hear what people have to say. The other type of criticism is friendly fire, right? You think of warfare. It's not, you know, anytime you get blown up, it's never friendly, but that's what it's called, friendly fire. This is unfair criticism, yet it's not meant to destroy you. And I think we need to distinguish when we talk about criticism, because people will come in and they will say some unfair things about you. But they're not necessarily seeking to destroy you as a person. They're not trying to ruin your reputation. They're not trying to destroy the ministry, at least intentionally. Maybe unwittingly, that's what the enemy is doing through them. But that's not their goal. We need to be aware of that. And this often happens as the rumor mill gets going. Gossip begins to happen. People begin to hear things, and then they may come to you with a criticism. Or maybe they see a decision that you've made from a distance and they have a hard time understanding why you would decide to do that with this person. And then their criticism begins to come into place. And maybe you hear about it. You know, a lot of times the reason why they do that is because they don't have all the information, right? Can anybody else relate to that? You make decisions, but you can't. You cannot give all the information. You cannot give all the facts of why you decided to do what you did in that circumstance. And so you can begin to get criticized, and this can be painful. It can be destructive. And we need to be aware of that. But this is something that goes on. And Paul knew a lot about that kind of criticism, didn't he? The Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 3 through 5. He was having some intense friendly fire that was coming upon him. He started this church. I don't think they wanted to destroy him, yet they were very willing to criticize him for many, many things. And so in 1 Corinthians 4, verses 3 through 5, we read, "But with me," and we've already read this passage, "so, but with me, it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by a human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself, for I know nothing against myself, yet I am not justified by this. But he who judges me is the Lord. Therefore, judge nothing before the time until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the heart. Then each one's praise will come from God." There's three quick points I want to make from here. Number one, verse 3, it's not a big deal. There's a lot of liberation when you can come to that place that Paul did, when he says, it is a very small thing. Now, let's be honest with each other. When people are criticizing us and judging us, it's hard to say that it is a huge deal. It becomes the thing that dominates your waking moments, your sleeping moments, your free time. And it's all around you. And it became a big deal. You begin to talk to people about it. And the more you talk to people about it, the bigger it becomes. But for Paul, he said, it's not a big deal. I can remember when I had just come back from the mission field after being in Australia for 2 years. And man, I had been ripped apart. It was my introduction into the mean side of church. I mean, when I went overseas, I knew nothing about the inner workings of the church. I loved Jesus. I felt called to be a missionary. I felt called to teach the word. And then, you know, but I got there and the church began to split over a thing called the church constitution. I had no idea what that was. Bylaws? I had no idea that such a thing even existed. But the church split and there was all kinds of trouble that was going on. And I remember this one night when we were all planning to go out bowling, and then suddenly the bowling plans fell apart because the friends that I had spent so much time with over the years knew that I was going to be there, and they said, if he's going to be there, we're not going to be there. Boy, that was a knife that just went deep into my soul, and it cut me. And I had a hard time getting over that until one night, Calvary Costa Mesa, Odin Fong was teaching. And he taught and he read this verse. I don't even know that he taught on this verse, but he read it. And these words jumped out. But with me, it is a very small thing. It had been a huge deal to me that I was criticized and treated unfairly in that way. It was a dominating factor in my mind. And you may relate to that right now, but let me just say to you, it is not a big deal. So says the Holy Spirit through the Apostle Paul. It's not a big deal. So that's something we have to just step up, and by faith we have to grab onto that one, because logically that does not make sense. But we need to make certain that we don't let it become a big deal. In verse 4, another lesson there is, remember who you answer to. For Paul, he found comfort in saying, I don't have to answer to your judgment. I will answer to the Lord for the things that I have done or I haven't done. And then he says in verse 5, God knows. And I found a lot of comfort through this whole process over the last 2 years or so of all the criticism that came from this one individual. I found a lot of comfort in the fact that God knew. God knew what was going on. God knew the decision that had been made, and he knew why it had been made. And many of the reasons that I had for making that decision, I cannot share. Because I am pretty confident, had I ever shared them, there probably would have been a lawsuit. I knew things. And I couldn't share them, and I couldn't explain why I made the decisions that I made with this. But God knew. So I think those are three good lessons right there. Is it's not a big deal. Don't cling on to it too much. Don't let it dominate your thoughts. Don't let it dominate your conversation with your wife. Don't let it be the conversation that dominates your elder meetings. You're going to have to talk about stuff at times, but don't let it become a big deal. And we'll see why in just a moment. And that God knows, he knows what's happening. The third type of criticism is that enemy fire. Now, this one, it has the goal of seeing you damaged. It has the goal of seeing your reputation ruined, and has the goal of ruining the ministry you are involved with, which is that's exactly what the guy stated to me. He says, there's been three pastors before you that have come up against me on this kind of a matter. He says, and none of them are in the ministry. You will be the fourth. I said, I don't think so. But that was his goal and what he was in all the letters that he had sent out. Over in Psalm 37, verses 1 through 9, and David was a guy, boy, he knew about unfair criticism, didn't he? He wrote about it quite a bit. It was neat that the Lord timed it, that I was teaching through the Psalms at the very heat of this battle. I can remember teaching Psalm 37 this past year, and man, I had a lot I wanted to say. Actually, there's some people from the church here, they've never even heard these things, because I never stood from the pulpit and talked about this. So they're hearing it maybe for the very first time that this was going on. I didn't make it public. The elders knew. A few people on staff knew. A key usher to take the guy out if he ever chose to come in. I'll have to be honest here, though. I did tell him, I said, if he doesn't have a gun, let him come. Let him come all the way in if he's coming to do. That will be a justifiable reason for me to actually lock up with this guy. So, of course, I was joking, but this passage was there when I was teaching. When I was going through these difficulties, and there's just some simple points. We'll go quickly through them. You can come back and you can meditate on them. I don't even know how long I'm supposed to go. What time am I supposed to end? Like 3 minutes? 3 minutes? Okay. So there in verse one, and I'm just gonna give you the points, but you can follow them. Number one, don't stress out. Don't fret because of evildoers. And Paul stated this, don't let it be a big deal. In verse 2, he says, they're going to pass away. It is going to leave. This is not going to last forever. In verses 3 through 5, he says, trust in the Lord. Trust that God is going to defend your name. Trust that God is going to watch out for the ministry. The reputation. And he threatened, and he had conversations with Christianity. I wasn't supposed to say that. He had a conversation with a Christian magazine going. And, he was going to make it go viral on the internet. Boy, he caused fear. I was like, Lord, you're the defender. I have to trust in the Lord. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. And you don't want to take what's God. Let him deal with it. And verse 6, David says, God's going to reveal the truth. He's going to make it clear what has truly taken place. 3 weeks after this guy's divorce was final, he was married again. I had said this all along to the elders, that there was something else going on. And you know, when that happened, there was just, I hate to say it, I felt good about it because I know the pain that it caused another person, but boy, it was there. It became known. In verse 7, be patient for the Lord to work. Let him deal with it. Let him, in his perfect timing, bring it about. In verse 8, the one that I had to struggle with the most, do not be angry. Do not be angry. Forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. So those are some principles that you can take and you can apply. And this is bonus points here. Number one, seek wise and trusted counsel. Don't answer a critic. And then in the very next verse, it says, answer a critic. So seek the wise counsel. I spoke with the elders. I spoke with Chuck. I spoke with my pastor, Brian. And we talked about it. And Proverbs 26:4 says, don't answer a critic. You got to come to a place, a fool, where you just say, I'm done and I'm walking away. And it did get to that place. But in the very next verse, it says, answer a fool. And so there's a time where you do have to engage and really, how do you know what to do at what point in time? Prayer and discerning of the Spirit to know when to say something and when to be quiet. So I pray that you don't have to go through those types of experiences, but I realize that many of you will and are. And I would just say, is going to end. It's going to come to an end. And if you just follow the Lord and His advice, He will guide you through those choppy seas and you're going to come out on the other side fine. Just don't create a mess by taking it into your own hands. Lord, thank You that You are our defender. Thank You that really, Lord, it's Your ministry. We're Your servants. And so...